Welcome everyone to DJ M's Diversity Pod, and yes, we are back this week, and this week we are going to be talking about all those fun types of recruitment bias. Just as a recap, last week we covered periods, and in talking about periods, we talked about how, yes, they may be a personal matter for a lot of women, but unfortunately a lot of public regulations are imposed within the workplace that can make it difficult for women to actually deal with their periods, particularly if they are more on the painful side or if they have conditions that can make them a little bit more difficult to deal with as well. Now, moving on to this week, we are going to be talking about biases, because there seem to be a lot of different biases that can actually affect the recruitment process, and with many of them being unconscious, many recruiters might not actually realise that, you know, they're biased. And that can be a very strange thing to deliberate and think of when you kind of sit there with yourself and you kind of say, right, I'm not biased. I wouldn't really judge somebody based on X, Y, or Z characteristic. But with unconscious bias, there are tendencies to not realise that you have these biases or affinities to certain people or away from certain people in the first place. So it's important to realise that they can exist. Though for many, the intent may not be deliberately malicious or out there to, you know, subordinate certain candidates or, you know, mitigate their chances from applying and being successful, it's very important to remember that you can still be biased against a candidate without having a malicious intent. Because not everybody knows about the fact that there are unconscious bias, it is used as an umbrella term. And within there are lots of different biases that are touched upon or fall under this umbrella term. And it's of course not necessary that all or if any of these biases will be present in a recruiter selection process. So we've got 15 types of biases that we are going to lay out for you. And throughout the research process, it is important to note that ThriveMap.com and Heather.com and the CIPD website were very important research sources for us to present this information to you, and they will be linked in the accompanying blog posts that are published on the DJM website. Anyway, let's get started with this list. First up, and I'm just going to start off by listing them all off, and then we're going to get into a little bit more detail. We've got conscious bias, unconscious bias, confirmation bias, effect heuristics, expectation anger, the halo and the horn effect, overconfidence bias, similarity attraction bias, illusory correlation, affinity bias, beauty bias, conformity bias, contrast effect, and judgment bias. And the last one is one type. Now, reading through some of these words and with you guys listening to them, some of these may seem very inaccessible and jargony. The idea is that, you know, understanding what exactly these types of biases are may be difficult for some people if they've not had the correct training or have never heard the words before. So with that in mind, we aim to break the language down in the simplest way possible. So this podcast or the blog, if you need to read it, are helpful resources for, you know, HR groups, freelancers or recruiters to understand if any sort of bias is possibly affecting the hiring process or workplace morale or the workplace environment. So, as I said before, unconscious and conscious bias tend to be umbrella terms, and a lot of the terms that fall after that in the list that I listed are basically fall under those two umbrellas. So let's start with defining conscious bias. Conscious bias is when you are deliberately sanctioning someone based on a demographical or protected characteristic. And this can include looks, height, race, religion, parenthood status, what educational institution they previously attended, their sexuality or sexual orientation, their gender or gender identity, and their marital status. Long list. This is highly problematic. And as a recruiter, we definitely need to be aware of how your personal views and affinity or likeness towards certain races or groups of people can affect your judgment on hiring the best candidate. This is deliberately not giving equal opportunities to candidates who are applying for vacancies with you. Unconscious bias. Unconscious bias is when you are not necessarily aware of the influences that are affecting your decisions within the recruitment process. Sometimes the influence can be so small and they may not be immediately apparent. And if you do want a little bit more of a detailed understanding of what unconscious bias is, we did a detailed evaluation on unconscious bias and a type of recruitment which is called name blind recruitment on our website. And under that title, you will be able to find not only an article but a podcast to listen to, so you get an idea of what unconscious bias is all about. The key thing to remember about unconscious bias is that it can actually manifest in a range of different ways. And now, getting back to that all important list, I'm going to be talking about some of them. Let's start with confirmation bias. Confirmation bias is basically having an initial assumption about a candidate. And what you do as a recruiter is you look for that information, behaviour, or tendency within that candidate that you are interviewing to confirm your bias. This can be a very conscious decision. An interviewer can ask very specific questions or ask the candidate to complete certain tasks in a trial work day that are actually non-essential to the recruitment process and the interview selection process. In some cases, confirmation bias can be affirmative action in ensuring that you want to find a reason to disqualify a candidate. So you pick a characteristic or a tendency and you find a way to confirm it. Why? Because you do not want them as a candidate. Or, completely opposite, you do want them as a candidate. Affect heuristics. In some ways, this is quite similar to confirmation bias, but there are certain specific differences. This is when a recruiter judges a candidate's ability or suitability for a job. And in some cases, they can come up to short-ended conclusions about whether a candidate can do the job or not. And this can be due to either conscious or unconscious ideas about who they think this candidate is and what they are capable of. The underlying thing here is that a recruiter's predetermined bias can actually stop them from hiring an exceptional candidate who would be perfect for the position, because they are judging them on their personal ideologies of what being a suitable candidate is. Expectation anchor. We are at number 3 now. So this is an interesting analogy that was put forward by ThriveMap, and this is where we sourced it from. And this suggests that recruiters have many, many things to consider when they are hiring for a new role. The role responsibilities, the type of candidate they are looking for, whether they are able to relocate. So this is just some of the information that recruiters have to consider as they are going through the candidate selection process. In turn, recruiters may automatically reduce the scope of what they would be considering appropriate behaviours, tendencies, experience for a position. So what they may end up doing is alienating specific candidates who do not meet this narrowed down criteria that has been set down by the recruiter. And sometimes this may not be intentional. This can be unintentional for the recruiter to be dealing with the burden of, you know, especially when it's a position with a massive scale of candidates. However, again, this can be a very conscious attempt at excluding certain candidates who may not fit into a particular ideology or essential quota or agenda that the recruiter has now set. Number 4 and number 5 we will do together because they are opposite sides of the same coin. And that is the halo and the horn effect. And yes, if you've got the angel devil image going on in your head, you are going in the right direction. So the halo and the horn effect are exciting demonstrations of bias. And I say exciting just because it is deeply rooted in psychology, and I think the psychology behind it is quite interesting. The halo effect is concerned with believing that people who are considered traditionally attractive are believed to be the most beautiful, and they are also believed to be the most proficient when it comes to applying for a job and actually being selected for that job and carrying it out properly. Now, when we talk about this idea of traditional beauty, you can think about eye colour, skin colour, hair colour, and ability needs. And for some individuals who follow religion, maybe particularly disadvantaged, and individuals who are not white will be disadvantaged when applying for somebody who is displaying this bias through the halo or the horn effect. So the idea is that if there is somebody who is traditionally beautiful, there is an automatic assumption that their negative tendencies and their negative qualities will be overshadowed in the recruitment process, and therefore you assume that they will be able to do the job. Whether that is true or not is going to be considered or determined when they start the job. Now, conversely, when you look at the horn effect, you have the complete opposite, in which somebody is unattractive, and in the traditional sense, we are talking about it again, hair colour, eye colour, skin colour, and ability and accessibility needs. They are stigmatized, possibly racialized, and their negative tendencies can be highlighted more than their skills and experiences, and they may not be considered a good fit for a role or a company. And common examples within workplaces where the halo or the horn effect has taken place is that anyone who is wearing a religious headdress or is overweight is considered not to be a good fit for a company. So this is something that is definitely worth looking into, I think. So now we are at overconfidence bias. Overconfidence bias, kind of self-explanatory and given in the name, is when a single recruiter believes that they have the best ability to pick the best candidate based on their own assumption of what good skills, what good experiences, and possibly what good demographics make up the best type of employee. And they will typically not consult with others in the hiring processes when deliberating what candidates are best. This can allow much different biases in terms of affinity and confirmation bias to creep up in the recruitment process, making it a very unfair process for candidates when a recruiter solely believes that they alone have the correct ideology or belief for what is right and what is wrong. Similarity attraction bias. This is something that is somewhat self-explanatory and a much like effect heuristics. It is a psychological term. And there is a lot of psychological predetermination about a candidate involved. This form of bias is kind of concerned with the idea that people are more comfortable and attracted to those who may have a similar physical or even cultural or religious background to them. This is because you as a recruiter may feel that it is a lot more easier for you to build a rapport with them because you will find commonalities or similarities between you. This can become a problem when the recruiter cares more about the commonalities between the candidate and themselves rather than the skills that they possess that would make them suitable for the vacant position. Now we are up to illusory correlation. This is much more of a scientific principle. It is based in scientific experimentation, and it can actually be tested by researchers because you use hypothesis and falsify claims. In this capacity, it can become a lot more difficult to prove bias because, you know, you can't readily assume that a bias is occurring. It kind of needs to be tested, if you're following my gist here. However, when an individual makes a claim about two random variables, let's give an example here to make it a little bit more clear-cut. Hijab-wearing women are more passive and shy. They will deem this to be true regardless of whether it is not. Now we are at affinity bias. This is very similar to similarity attraction bias, in which you will have an affinity or likeness towards somebody who is like you. And this is something that is often akin to recruitment. The premise of affinity bias is slightly broader because it can link to a range of different things, such as hometown, mutual friends, family connection, educational institutions that you have in common, previously working in the same locations, living or travelling to the same cities, enjoying the same foods. Like, it's a very broad parameter for what you can have an affinity with them for. This can affect hiring because we are focusing again on our affinity and likeness towards characteristics that are not essential to the recruitment process. And up until this point, I think you will come to realise, and it's going to continue again as we go through the list, that there seems to be a trend where a lot of the time the bias is constituted with focusing a lot more on personal values and personal connectivity to a candidate as opposed to actually caring about the previous roles and experiences that have got them to apply to the position in the first place. Finally, let's get on to the last three that are left. You've got beauty bias, which is very directly linked to the halo and the horn effect, where beautiful people are considered to be more confident. This time, though, it's not traditionally linked to the idea of being traditionally beautiful, and it is a lot more subjective to what the recruiter sees as attractive or beautiful, and this can be influenced by what they see in the mass media at the time or what they find attractive in terms of physical appearance. Conformity bias is another psychologically determined one. It is when an individual gives in to the peer pressures from the people around them. So in a sense, you can say that this is the complete opposite to overconfidence bias, where an individual's views in recruitment is affected by their peers who are delegated to help them make the decisions. And in some cases, the recruiter can find it incredibly difficult to have their say in the process, and their voice can be overshadowed or completely muted by others making the decision as well. Finally, judgment bias, which I think is probably the most interesting one. Of course, these are all interesting and important forms of bias that need to be addressed, but this is one that I think is incredibly unconscious, especially when it comes to large-scale candidate applications. So, much of the time, candidates apply in large numbers to a vacancy. So, recruiters have to deal with a large stack of resumes to get through. I think graduate recruiters are definitely going to be thinking about this one. And when you are looking and comparing the resumes, of course, you know that you should be looking at the resume in relation to the entire cohort and looking at the skills and experience. But when you've got such a large candidate pool, realistically, are you even looking at one resume in relation to the entire cohort, or are you just comparing it to the resume that you saw previously or the one before? So what you are basically doing is you're shifting your priorities and who you want to hire on a resume to resume basis. And in a holistic sense, some candidates can be judged more harshly or more leniently based on the CV that came before theirs, especially if there are a lot of candidates for a vacancy. So when you think about it in that regard, we can see some clear problems in how bias can affect the recruitment process. There are some techniques and reasonable methods that have been put in place to provide effective mitigation and reduction of certain types of biases, one which we have covered in detail a lot, which is name-blind recruitment. But there are other hiring processes included that can help recruiters be more aware and more ready to mitigate the types of biases. So, for anybody who is implementing very conscious forms of bias, is disciplinary action needed? Is testing required? Is probation required? Or is certified training or coaching required for them to maybe be more aware of how their bias creates a discourse of inequality? Implementing skills tests within the hiring process so you can directly compare skill scores, quantify it. Spreading awareness with educational sessions within HR departments or recruiters. And this obviously involves some sort of mandatory or optional training. Moving to a structured interview process where a recruiter is not allowed to ask any other questions but the questions that have been pre-approved by the department. Starting with a diverse hiring team is another option, just because they will be a lot more conscious of the fact and watching to see if any biased decisions are made towards any groups that are particularly underrepresented within an industry. Testing for biases within a recruiter is another option, but the one thing to be wary of when testing for biases is that while you can test, especially if they're unconscious, it is very difficult to change. Not to say that it is impossible, but this is something that, again, will require some self-awareness, reflexivity, coaching, or possibly training. So today it seems that I have given you guys a lot of information on what bias really is and how it can affect the recruitment process and how actually it can create this unfair discourse of inequality. Of course, sometimes this is conscious, and that is when it's the most problematic, and it is also unconscious. Not to say that that is any less problematic. So, it is time for us to become a lot more self-aware, to test for biases, to understand how they can affect your hiring processes. You never know that your biases may actually stop you from hiring the most exceptional people. Anyway, I've given everyone a lot to think about this week, and I'm just going to leave it there. This has been Noor on DJM's Diversity Pod, and I will see you guys next week with another episode.